Thank you very much. I'm going to give you a broad overview of the subject at hand, particularly outlining what I see as the role of the Food Standards Agency. And I hope that my talk will serve as a scene setter for the subsequent talks and also for the discussion later on. If I can get this thing to work. I will. This is just a little technical hitch. It won't take me a few minutes to work it out. Yes, I wonder if it's just gone to sleep. Okay, right, it's working now. Thank you. Food production, sale and consumption, of course, involves all of us. It's very big business. It involves every person in the country. And this gives you some scale indication of what's involved. People spend about £136 billion a year on food. It accounts for nearly a fifth of consumers' expenditure, and it's estimated that 80 million items are bought every week. On the enforcement of food safety and standards, there are 2,000 or so environmental health officers and trading standards officers employed by local authorities, part of whose job is to enforce food law, and there are about 1,600 staff of the Meat Hygiene Service responsible for enforcement in abattoirs and meat cutting plants. And the local authorities and the Food Standards Agency, who employ the Meat Hygiene Service staff, cover between them more than 600,000 food premises. And as I'm sure we'll hear later, as an industry, it is the largest industrial sector concerned with consumer issues and employs over 2.5 million people. So out of all that panoply of people, who is responsible for food safety? That's the question that we're being asked to discuss. It could be a role for central government, in other words, the Food Standards Agency, set up on April the 1st with responsibility for protecting consumer interests. It could be said to be the local authorities, who have a large part of responsibility for enforcement of food regulations and ensuring that premises obey standards of hygiene and other aspects of food security. It could be said to be the responsibility of those producing, manufacturing, selling, or supplying food in other ways, or it could be said to be the responsibility of all of us as individual consumers. So that's the panoply of people who might be responsible for food safety, and I think, just to come to the end of my talk right now, that all of those people have an important role to play. But I want to say a little bit now about the role of the Food Standards Agency. The Food Standards Agency was set up in order to protect people's health and other interests of consumers in relation to food. And our roles, which encompass the whole food chain from farm to fork, can be summarized as protecting the health of consumers by ensuring that enforcement of food law is properly carried out, supporting consumer choice by ensuring that consumers have access to the right kinds of information, both on labels on food and other sorts of information that may help them to make choices and interpret labels, and providing advice, and that includes not just food safety but also nutrition. And thirdly, we have a role in developing policy for the UK government, both at home and overseas. Since much food law emanates from Brussels, we have a very important role in negotiating or providing the UK negotiating position in Europe. And we have also a research budget of about £27 million a year, which is deployed through contracts to underpin all of those functions. So that's just a little bit about the Food Standards Agency. I now want to briefly say a bit about food safety. What do we mean when we say that food is safe, and how does this relate to the role of the Food Standards Agency? Well, I quote from two texts. One is Lord Phillips, who says, "The government does not set out to achieve zero risk, but reduce a risk which should be acceptable to the reasonable consumer." Doesn't seem to me to quite make sense, that, but that's what I'm told he said. Far more eloquent is this quote from myself in front of the Agriculture and Health Select Committee, I do not answer questions of the kind, is food X safe, in absolute terms, because I believe there is no such thing as absolute safety of food. So I think we do have to be clear when we talk about whose responsibilities it is to ensure food safety, that we're not talking about absolutes. And there's an interesting debate to be had about what is an acceptable level of risk, which we might want to pick up on later on. If you look at the newspaper headlines, and needless to say, I get stacks of cuttings this thick every day to study, you could easily convince yourself that not only is food not absolutely risk-free, it's dangerous enough to induce complete panic and turn you into a non-eater overnight. The newspapers carry regular food scare stories, and most of them, of course, don't have much basis, but they do, in a sense, represent the media's approach very often to food safety issues. You could ask, well, what impact does that have on people out there? What do people actually think about food safety? And from the survey work we've done, as well as other people, Consumer Association and industry, if you ask people what are their concerns when they're buying food, they mention things about how much money it costs, they mention things like quality, they mention things like being able to buy food that appeals to their family, and very few people go into the shop thinking, is this food that I'm going to buy safe? In other words, for most people, most of the time, when they're out there making shopping decisions, food safety is not an issue. It's taken as a given. However, if you then probe a little bit further and say to people, well, what, you know, supposing you were worried about food safety, what would you be worried about? Well, the concerns that come the top three on the list, this was a survey we did in May, the top three on the list of concerns are BSE, Salmonella, which I take to be an icon for foodborne illness, no doubt Hugh will tell us more about that later, and GM food safety. So the summary of that is that people on the whole are not concerned about food safety. If you ask them, these are the things that come to their minds. Now, if you say, well, what actually are the real food risks? Where are the risks in the things that we eat? And there are many ways of estimating that, but one way is to estimate food-related deaths per year in the country. That's one estimate of risk. It may not be a complete one, but it's a picture. And if you look at it that way around, it's estimated that between a quarter and a third of cardiovascular disease deaths are diet-related, about a fifth of cancers may be diet-related. So that gives you 73,000 and 34,000 deaths, respectively. Foodborne illness, Hugh may know more accurate figures, but it's very difficult to get the exact numbers, but the estimate is probably somewhere between 50 and 300 people a year. Food allergy, anaphylactic shock, less than 20 people a year die of that. BSE, variant CJD, well, we don't know is the answer there, but up to now the number has been between 50 and 20 a year. From eating GM food, so far as we know, nobody has died, not just in the UK, but anywhere in the world. So there is an interesting question about what people perceive as the risks when pressed and where the risks actually lie. And of course, it's a familiar fact in the study of risk, the academic study of risk, that people's perception of risk doesn't necessarily match up with the actual assessment of risk from scientific evidence. So coming back to the Food Standards Agency and our role in this, what I'm now turning from safety into risk, our role in risk is really illustrated by these starbursts. And they are fuzzy, and they're not connected with each other in a deliberate way. That's meant to be iconic. So we have a role in risk assessment, for which we rely on the advice of experts, scientists and others, a role in communicating risk, and a role in managing risk. All of those three things link together. In carrying out those functions, we have to recognize that very often, the bottom left-hand side in gray, there's a great deal of uncertainty in the scientific risk assessment. So we have to manage risk in the face of incomplete knowledge, not least in the area of BSE. And we also have to recognize, as I've just emphasized, that people's perception of risk may differ slightly from the scientific evaluation. And whilst one doesn't want to base one's risk management on what people think as opposed to what is, one has to recognize that what people think is an important influencing factor. The reason I haven't connected those up in any particular way is because there isn't a simple linear arrangement. I think traditionally the view was in government that you assessed risk and then you decided what to do about it and you told people. We carry out all of our business in a very public way. We usually, all our board meetings are in public and we discuss food safety issues in public. And in that environment, you can't operate a linear sequence. You have to operate in a way that is more complicated and recognises that whilst discussing the assessment of risk, you also have to discuss the management and at the same time you're communicating. So that's why I haven't drawn those connected up in any particular sequence, because they don't. What's our general approach to managing risk? Well, these summarise some of the key points, I think. We rely on the best advice we can get, drawing on expert committees that I'll mention shortly and acknowledging uncertainties. We consult widely where time permits, and we provide an open and honest evaluation of the risk assessment and uncertainty. We continually reassess the risks in light of new evidence. We try to apply a consistent approach to risk management across different domains, and that's an interesting question for government as a whole. How much money should be invested on behalf of the taxpayer in managing risks in one area versus another? We try to be proportionate in managing risks. We've seen in the whole issue about rail transport emergence of the fact that the actions by rail track probably weren't proportionate, in that 25% of travellers were driven off the trains onto the roads, where the risks of dying in an accident are 12 times greater than they were on the trains. And that doesn't seem to me to be necessarily a proportionate action. And as I've already said, we recognise that we're not there to eliminate risk, but to reduce risks to acceptable levels, whatever that may mean. And because we have an enforcement role, and one of the things that came out of the Phillips inquiry was the importance of enforcement, we ensure that the good intentions for risk management are put into practice by monitoring and auditing the enforcement done by local authorities and by the Meat Hygiene Service. I am tempted in this slide to refer to the precautionary principle, which may crop up later, but I'm not going to, other than to say the precautionary principle has the difficulty of meaning everything to everybody and therefore potentially meaning nothing. It is interpreted, as I'm sure you're all aware, to mean two diametrically opposed things. One of them, let's say, in the attitude of some pressure groups to GM safety, that there should be no action until absolute 100% safety has been proved beyond doubt. Well, of course, that is clearly impossible. Another approach to precautionary principle is the approach taken by other pressure groups in relation to climate change, which is to say, whilst there is uncertainty, this is no excuse for inaction. Let's get on and do something, even though we don't quite know the full context of within which we're doing it, because we don't have complete knowledge. So rather than try to advocate a precautionary principle, I think what's laid out here are the key elements of a precautionary approach to risk management. And in the end, using those principles, one has to come to judgments, and there's no substitute in the end for judgment on the basis of the evidence available. I don't really need to show this slide in front of an august body of scientific experts such as this, but this is to emphasise that we do rely very heavily for risk assessment on a raft of committees, some of which are shown here. And again, thinking back to Phillips and responsibilities, where responsibilities lie, one of the mistakes that was identified in the Phillips inquiry was asking these committees to do inappropriate things. For example, SEAC being asked to manage risk rather than to assess risk. And so we're very clear that the role of the expert committees that advise us is risk assessment and not risk management. That's our job. Just to complete the story about risk, when last summer Bob May, Liam Donaldson and I wrote a report for the government on risk assessment, the role of scientific committees in food safety assessment, we made the distinction between voluntary risks, where the role of the government is to put underpinning control regulation in place and then to ensure individuals are given sufficient information and advice for them to make their own choices. On the one hand, voluntary risks, and then involuntary risks, where individuals may have no meaningful choice or vulnerable groups are involved, or the public health risk must be so, maybe so serious, or broader societal concerns, then the government should intervene to protect public health. And so if I just illustrate that in particular examples, we would argue that with voluntary risks, such as food containing allergies, which are of course significant to those who have serious allergy to nuts, the approach is not to ban nuts altogether from the food chain, but to have clear labelling and clear information. On the other hand, there are some areas where the risks are so pervasive and potentially so difficult to manage through voluntary action, and I would take BSE as a case where we have to regulate to manage the risk to a level that's acceptable to the country as a whole. Let me end by giving some examples, moving from the theory to actual practice, to tell you some of the things that we have been doing. And some of you have been involved with one or more of these, so you'll be familiar with them. In the area of BSE, we undertook, at the request of the Prime Minister, starting on day one, really, a review of the current BSE controls, which has both, we've now completed and it's going to be published next Monday. That's both informing the UK government on the control measures and also informing our negotiating stance in relation to European-wide measures which have been introduced or will be introduced on the 1st of January as a result of the Agriculture Council decision on the 4th of December. And the points I want to make about this review, I won't go into any of the details, but the points about it in relation to what I've said about the role of government in risk management and risk assessment is that we carried out the whole review in public with public debate from a wide diversity of opinions, put all of the drafts of the review and all the comments made by the public on our website, and talked very honestly about the uncertainties, the incompleteness of the science, and the way in which one is managing risk in the face of incomplete knowledge. Just to give you some statistics for our website that we set up dedicated to this, it's been now visited by more than a third of a million people, and a third of a million visits, should I say, and the various drafts of the report in different stages of completeness have been downloaded by about 3,000 people, and many of those have commented through the website back into the process. So here's an area of major public concern where we've been responsible for assessing the risk management actions in place and advising the government on what to do next, and we've done it in a very open, transparent, inclusive way, perhaps translating from the earlier approach that was taken that was criticised by Phillips. A second area is to do with enforcement, and here we've set in place a new arrangement between central government and the local authorities. The local authorities still having responsibility for food law enforcement on the ground, but the central government, through the Food Standards Agency, having responsibility for setting with the local authorities the enforcement standards and monitoring the enforcement activity through quarterly reports to us, auditing the activity. We'll audit about 40 or 50 of the 500 local authorities each year, and where necessary, hoping that it won't be necessary, we will take over if local authorities are failing. Another thing that we've done in this area is to, again, introduce much greater transparency. We don't have complete data for enforcement, but the data we do have from the preceding regime, we've put on our website. We didn't actually construct a league table, but interestingly, within 24 hours of putting the data on our website, the 20 or so worst performing local authorities had calculated their position and telephoned us to explain how they were going to get better. So I think I don't call this name and shame, I call this celebrating success of the good performers, but it does have a powerful motivating effect. And at our board meeting on Thursday, where we'll be looking at an update on this, we'll be highlighting the 14 laggards who were the worst performers, and all but four of those have now taken action to improve things. And the third area is to do with foodborne illness, which I'm sure Hugh will say more about. What we've done as an agency is to set a target of reducing foodborne illness by 20% over the next 5 years. And there are a number of ways in which we'll achieve that. but a very important way will be to promulgate throughout the food chain the adoption of best practice hazard analysis critical control points, which is common sense hygiene, to ensure that right from production through to consumption in the home or in a restaurant, people obey best hygiene practice guidance. And the experience from other countries suggests that the introduction of HACCP, which is the norm in food manufacturing industry and in most retail catering outlets, but other countries have shown that by promulgating that more widely in the food industry, for example, in the meat sector, significant benefits can be gained from the point of view of food safety. So just to summarise what I've said, nothing in life is risk-free. So we're not there. The role of government is not to eliminate risk, but to manage risk to acceptable levels. I think important in dealing with the whole issue of risk is two-way communication, both listening to people's concerns, but also explaining in a very open and honest way what the risks and uncertainties are. I've emphasised that the role of the FSA, the role of government, is in assessment, communication and management of risk. And I've distinguished between voluntary risks and risks that are managed on behalf of people by government. And then finally, to re-emphasise the point I made at the very beginning, that ultimately food safety is a shared responsibility of all the players, from the primary producer through to the individual consumer in the home, and that although central government has an important role to play, we can't do it on our own. Thank you.